That was the world in which my grandparents had been raised, the dab-smack, landlocked center of the country, a place where decency and endurance and the pioneer spirit were joined at the hip with conformity and suspicion and the potential for unblinking cruelty. They'd grown up less than 20 miles away from each other, my grandmother in Augusta, my grandfather in El Dorado, towns too small to warrant boldface on a road map. And the childhoods they liked to recall for my benefit portrayed small-town, Depression-era America in all its innocent glory. 4th of July parades and the picture shows on the side of a barn, fireflies in a jar and the taste of vine-ripe tomatoes sweet as apples, dust storms and hailstorms and classrooms filled with farm boys who got sewn into their woolen underwear at the beginning of winter and stank like pigs as the months wore on. Even the trauma of bank failures and farm foreclosures seemed romantic when spun through the loom of my grandparents' memories, a time when hardship, the great leveler that had brought people closer together, was shared by all. So you had to listen carefully to recognize the subtle hierarchies and unspoken codes that had policed their early lives, the distinctions of people who don't have a lot and live in the middle of nowhere. It had to do with something called respectability. There were respectable people and not so respectable people, and although you didn't have to be rich to be respectable, you sure had to work harder at it if you weren't. Toot's family was respectable. Her father held a steady job all through the Depression, managing an oil lease for Standard Oil. Her mother had taught normal school before the children were born. The family kept their house spotless and ordered great books through the mail. They read the Bible, but generally shunned the tent revival circuit, preferring a straight-backed form of Methodism that valued reason over passion and temperance over both. My grandfather's station was more troublesome. Nobody was sure why. The grandparents who had raised him and his older brother weren't very well off, but they were decent, God-fearing Baptists, supporting themselves with work in the oil rigs around Wichita. Somehow, though, Gramps had turned out a bit wild. Some of the neighbors pointed out his mother's suicide. It was my grandfather, after all, then only 8 years old, who had found her body. Other, less charitable souls would simply shake their heads. The boy takes after his philandering father, they would opine, the undoubtable cause of the mother's unfortunate demise. Whatever the reason, Gramps' reputation was apparently well-deserved. By the age of 15, he'd been thrown out of high school for punching the principal in the nose. For the next 3 years, he lived off odd jobs, hopping rail cars to Chicago, then California, then back again, dabbling in moonshine, cards, and women. As he liked to tell it, he knew his way around Wichita, where both his and Toot's families had moved by that time, and Toot doesn't contradict him. Certainly Toot's parents believed the stories they heard about the young man and strongly disapproved of the budding courtship. The first time Toot brought Gramps over to the house to meet the family, her father took one look at my grandfather's black, slicked back hair and his perpetual wise guy grin and offered his unvarnished assessment. He looks like a wop. My grandmother didn't care. To her, a home economics major, fresh out of high school and tired of respectability, my grandfather must have cut a dashing figure. I sometimes imagine them, in every American town in those years before the war, him in baggy pants and a starched undershirt, brim hat cocked back on his head, offering a cigarette to this smart-talking girl with too much red lipstick and hair dyed blonde and legs nice enough to model hosiery for the local department store. He's telling her about the big cities, the endless highway, his imminent escape from the empty, dust-ridden plains where big plans mean a job as a bank manager and entertainment means an ice cream soda and a Sunday matinee, where fear and lack of imagination choke your dreams so that you already know on the day that you're born just where you'll die and who it is that'll bury you. He won't end up like that, my grandfather insists. He has dreams. He has plans. He will infect my grandmother with a great peripatetic itch that had brought both their forebears across the Atlantic and half of a continent so many years before.